Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Turning now to politics, all this summer we will be inviting the major candidates officially running for governor here in Massachusetts to make their cases to you. And we'll begin with the latest entrant into the race, former state representative Jeff Diehl, running in the Republican primary. Diehl unsuccessfully ran against Senator Elizabeth Warren in 2018, co-chaired the 2016 campaign here in Massachusetts for Donald Trump. Representative Jeff Diehl, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hey, Tiziana, thank you so much.
It's good to have you. So you ran for office for the Senate in 2018. Now it's 2021. You've declared for governor. What makes you better than anyone else now to be the governor of the Commonwealth and to run the state?
Well, I don't want to put it as better than anyone else, just different priorities. And I think some experience that may lend itself better to the position. Let's put it that way. I've served in the legislature for 8 years. I have a private sector experience. My wife and I own a small business. I work for another company as well. And look, we're like everybody else too. We've got two daughters, one in college, one in high school, just trying to make ends meet. I was furloughed during the pandemic. And so, you know, we certainly understand what's going on with people in Massachusetts. In 2018, I had the chance to travel around the state and meet a ton of people when I won the Republican primary to run against Elizabeth Warren for the Senate and learn really about what the regional issues were that I'd like to focus on. In fact, I was hoping at the time that the Senate seat would be more focused on what was important for Massachusetts. And now running for governor of Massachusetts, I think I had that real chance to talk about the issues that face our state, whether it's regionally or, you know, obviously in Boston, housing affordability. I think that, you know, my campaign right now is set up to be focused on Massachusetts. And I think that's really what's going to be a key factor in November of 2022.
So you've emphasized there a couple of times the Massachusetts focus. You have had a national tie. In 2018, you got support from then Vice President Mike Pence. You co-chaired the Trump campaign in 2016. It does appear that as you've begun this race, you are distancing yourself a bit from the president, but he has continued to press false narratives around the election in 2020 that it was stolen. Do you agree with him? And if he runs again in 2024, would you support him? Because that figures into your candidacy here in the Commonwealth.
No, I'm sure it does. And at this point, I don't think he's declared whether he's running or not. If he does decide to run, I'm still open to any other candidate that wants to make their case. I'm looking for the best person for the job at the time that they want to run. So, you know, in 2016, what he spoke about, drawing down troops in the Middle East, becoming energy independent, putting American economy first, those were things that I felt was important right here in Massachusetts to the district I was representing. And I think that that's why, he had strong support within the Republican Party here in Massachusetts. I know he didn't have support, you know, broadly in the state in general. But 2022 is a race, again, that I think is going to be more focused on what's important for our state, especially with a pandemic recovery. And that's really where I think the focus is going to be as we go forward.
Okay, and we will get there in a minute, but I do want to be clear here. Do you recognize Joe Biden as the legitimately elected president of the United States?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you've ever seen anything of me stating any otherwise. I think that, you know, obviously certain states are questioning whether or not their process is good, but that's not, the national consensus is that he won the election. There's no dispute here.
Okay, so one more. Given that, is it dangerous to the country to have a head of your party who continues to assert that a legitimate democratic election in our country was stolen?
Well, Tiziana, I'd like to ask you
where the former president is.
Well, can I ask you the same question? Back in 2016, when President Trump won, the question was whether Russia had interfered and delivered him into the presidency. And I think there was serious concern that there was U.S. departments that had actually taken part in trying to make that look like that was the case. So, look, no, I don't think that it's healthy to go forward. I think the Republican Party is moving forward and looking at new candidates. But I don't think that either party has been very generous to either candidate when these elections have ended recently.
So I am going to assert that there is a categorical difference between in the comparisons that you're making. But then I'm going to move on because we have local things to talk about, too. You've talked about your race against Senator Warren in 2018. This is another statewide race. You didn't make the case successfully across the state last time. With this race, if you got the nomination, what's your path to election in a general election running as a Republican?
Well, actually, TCN, if you look at the results of 2018's election, I was the third highest vote total of all candidates that were running at the time, and that includes the Democratic slate for all the statewide offices. So, you know, I do think that I was able to reach quite a few voters well beyond my party's registration, as you know, which is fairly low in the state. So I think that, again, this is a chance to take what I learned in 2018 and that support that I had and continue to add to it. Specifically at a time when, you know, my record in the legislature has always been to try to make sure that households have the resources they need to, you know, obviously put kids through school, be able to retire, and of course have good jobs. In 2014, I led a repeal of the index gas tax that won statewide. In fact, at the time, candidate Baker supported that effort that I pushed forward. So, look, I think that I have definitely a track record of success, despite losing to the senator in 2018. I'm really looking forward to making my case.
Okay, you just mentioned candidate Baker, so let's talk about that, because sort of pun intended, that is the elephant in the room here, Governor Baker, also a Republican. You have jumped into this race before he has announced his plans either way. Can we assume that that means you're saying that you do not believe he deserves a third term?
Well, look, I think the voters in the Republican primary are the ones who decide whether he deserves to have the opportunity to make the case for that third term. But I will say that regardless of whether he was going to run or not, it was my plan to make the entrance into the race. You know, I was really looking more at just my own ability to run another campaign. And, you know, obviously there's personal considerations with family and work. And I think that we came to the conclusion that, you know, it was worth doing this. You know, Governor Baker will certainly have to make the case as to, you know, why he deserves a third term. I understand that, you know, he gets support across the spectrum. But I think, again, this is going to be an interesting time because the pandemic certainly has pointed out areas of concern with management. And I think that that's a case I'll have to make, obviously, within the Republican primary.
You talked about management, and over the last week or, you know, few days in your interviews, you've been really clear in some areas of criticism of Charlie Baker: management around the pandemic, the vaccine rollout, the soldiers' home, the RMV, the cap and trade climate initiative. So since you've already spoken about those, let's put those aside. Where else do you think Charlie Baker has fallen short, or do you?
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, that we're currently could be doing is moving some of the there's federal funds that have just come in, about $5 billion. And then there's also a state surplus of tax revenue that he was putting or planning to put towards a two-month sales tax holiday. To me, the unemployment insurance trust fund that really got hit completely hard during the pandemic, that should be one area where I would think he should focus on, because that helps the small businesses that employ all the people in the state, getting them back onto the work roles. And at the same time, the enhanced unemployment, I think most states who have taken away the enhanced unemployment have been able to get a majority of people back to the workforce that were there before. And I think that, you know, small businesses right now are having a tough time in our state trying to get employees, you know, back. So it would be another step.
Are you advocating? Yeah. So are you advocating for early ending of enhanced unemployment?
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I think right now is the time to do that. We've got jobs, more jobs than I think people that are looking for work at this point. So it's certainly the time, I think, to move people from the roles back into the workforce. I think it's going to make for, obviously, less demand on the unemployment fund. It's going to also, obviously, give people, I think, a better sense of satisfaction going back to work. And obviously, we can collect tax revenue off of the work that they're doing. So there's multiple benefits to getting everybody back to work.
Okay, we've talked about the national party. Let's talk about the state Republican Party now. Whoever wins the Republican nomination, essentially, I think one argues they become the head of the party. Do you agree? And is that what you want to be? Do you want to be the head of the state Republican Party?
I'm looking to be the executive officer for the state of Massachusetts. It just so happens that I guess you influence the way your party acts, but I've got a friend from the legislature, Jim Lyons, who served with me for 8 years, who's currently head of the Mass GOP. I'll leave it to him to handle the headaches and you know, all the work that needs to be done as far as party building.
You know, you're going to get asked this. Do you support Lyons? He's quite controversial right now. A number of people, most elected Republicans in the state, have called on him to resign. Do you support him as the state party chair?
Well, I do support Jim, and I'll tell you, there's an internal fight within the Mass GOP, just like I think you'd admit there's internal struggles within the Democratic Party. I mean, there's factions that seem to be very progressive versus moderate Democrats, and I think the same thing's happening in the Mass GOP, only our issues tend to spill out into the press a bit more. So, you know, I think it's truthfully a mirror of what's happening nationally. You see the struggle within the National Democratic Party, the National Republican Party, as to who's the leader and really what are the issues they want to move forward with. But no, Jim and I certainly served together from 2010 to 2018. We know each other, and you know, basically, at this point, I think Jim is trying to make sure that the Mass GOP is focused on supporting all candidates from lower-level races, municipal races, all the way up through the legislature, whereas the focus in the past has always been just on the top of the ticket, really, the presidential candidate, then the governor's candidate every other 2 years. So I think, you know, I see what Jim's trying to do, and I think there's some resistance to it, but I think he'll get past that.
So lightning round here, Jeff Diehl. Make the case for why a Republican is the right choice in the corner office for the Commonwealth.
Well, first of all, this state has a history of electing Republican governors as the counterbalance to the Democratic supermajorities in the House and Senate. But on top of that, you know, yes, I may be center-right. Governor Baker may legislate center-left somewhat. But I think that the Democrat nominee, if national politics dictate where their policy or where their thinking is going to be, may be too radical for the state. So that's one thought going into this. But on top of that, again, I think my experience and work for the people of Massachusetts in the past is also going to be an asset.
Okay, former state representative from Whitman, Jeff Diehl. He is running for the Republican nomination for governor here in Massachusetts. Jeff Diehl, we hope you will come back and speak with us again as the campaign kind of cranks up.
Sounds good, TC, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Listeners, this is the first in a series of conversations that we plan to bring you this summer with all the major candidates running for governor. All right, so listening into that conversation with Jeff Diehl is Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter. Anthony, hi there.
Hey, Tiziana, nice to be with you.
So let me just start by asking you what stood out to you from Jeff Diehl there and the case he made to be governor.
Well, you know, Diehl's proposing to take on one of the more popular governors in the country, so it's a tall order, especially because Diehl himself is running from the Trump wing of the Republican Party in a state that voted 2-1 against Trump. Now, as I listen to his interview with you, he sounds like he's recasting himself a bit as a more of a moderate Republican. But if you're trying to run in the moderate Republican lane, you know, I think Charlie Baker pretty much owns that lane. So that's a tall order for Jeff Diehl. And if he wants to focus on local issues and move away from his former alignment with Trump, you know, he's going to have to make that case to voters. But moving big swaths of independents away from Baker and toward him is going to be his challenge. But it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Are there any poll numbers or other data, Anthony, that suggest that Baker could be vulnerable from the right with Jeff Diehl's candidacy?
Well, what we know is that Baker is more popular among Democrats than with Republicans. And, you know, his sort of secret sauce, as I've said on this show before, is that he's won over a lot of Democrats and a lot of independents and enough Republicans to be a very popular governor. Now, in terms of making a case, I mean, we heard Diehl making a case. I mean, Baker's has made some missteps along the way. I mean, he's got to contend with a state police overtime fraud scandal. There's a case to be made that the Holyoke Soldiers Home tragedy, where 76 veterans died, happened on his watch with someone that he helped appoint. You know, even the T, which Baker made a priority, has had problems, and there were also problems with the rollout of the vaccine. But none of that seems to stick. That's the issue that Baker seems to benefit from. So the latest poll we have back in March from Suffolk University and the Boston Globe shows 7 in 10 Massachusetts voters still approve of Baker. They give him high marks, especially for his management of the pandemic. So he'll be tough to beat.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about sequencing here. So in the offing, we have question marks over the heads of Attorney General Maura Healey and, as I talked about with Jeff Diehl, Governor Baker himself, and whether they're going to enter the race. It is notable that Jeff Diehl entered as a Republican candidate before Governor Baker, the Republican governor, made his decision. Does this change the calculus or anything else about who might enter or when with Diehl making this choice now?
I don't. You mean, are you asking, will it affect Maura Healey's decision that Diehl is getting in now?
Will it affect her decision at all, or her timing, or Governor Baker's timing? I guess I'm assuming, Anthony, that there's some sort of set of dominoes here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Charlie Baker is moving toward a decision. And I think, you know, inevitably he's taking his time, and that's because he's the incumbent and he can afford to. The fact that he now has a challenger from the right, sure, I'm sure that is a bit of a nudge that he's going to have to make up his mind. But, you know, he's been pretty consistent with his statements about when he's going to make up his mind. And it's coming eventually, but he keeps sort of trotting out the same answer, that that's a decision that he and Lieutenant Governor Karen Pulido have to make in conversations with their families, and that decision's coming soon. But I don't get the sense that Diehl jumping into the race is necessarily lighting a fire under that decision-making process.
Mm-hmm. All right. So last 30 seconds. What else? Obviously, you'll be watching for those potential announcements. What else are you going to watch for over the summer as the race heats up?
Well, we shouldn't forget that there are three really interesting Democrats running for governor as well. Former State Senator Ben Downing, State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz, and Harvard Professor Danielle Allen. Clearly, it's going to be a steep climb for them, but I'll be interested to see how they make their cases that voters should expect more from a governor. I mean, Baker has cast himself as an able administrator, and polls suggest that that's enough for Massachusetts voters who seem to like him. So the challenge for these Democrats is that a governor can and should do a lot more and address these systemic inequalities that plague parts of our economy. So I'll be looking for that case, how they make that case and how voters respond.
And we will invite all three of them to make their cases here on Radio Boston. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, thanks.
My pleasure.